You're listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely.
Hey guys, welcome to today's episode of Reading Writers. I'm Aaron, and we have a special guest along with us, don't we?
Well, first, I'm Dave.
That's right.
Hi, yeah, I'm Ed McMahon.
That's
Thank
right.
You. I'm here.
You know, I'm sorry. I'm just really excited about our guest today.
I am too.
I know, because she's awesome.
Many reasons. Let's just go right at it. She's my boss. All right. So we're going to address this right away. And if it gets weird at all, that's why. All right.
Basically invited herself onto the show and bullied
herself. That was decisive. That's not. Leadership. Yeah, that's what that was.
We had not like worked out our interview schedules. Okay, all right. You caught us a little off guard,
yes,
Jennifer. That's all that happened.
This is also going to be evidence for Dave's annual review here at LifeWay.
Yeah.
Where is that annual review? Hold on.
There's some interesting providential timing in this.
Dave, you should have said automatic yes if you wanted a good annual review. Jennifer Lyle is with us today.
Hey guys, I'm excited to be with you guys.
Yes, Jennifer is our vice president of books. I'm going to read like my funny thing for her. So she's the publishing, curation, and vision leader of the books area.
That's really good. We could totally use that. We can
I'll
use
update
that.
Your bio.
Yeah,
that's
that'll
good.
Be good.
That's good. Mm-hmm. So this includes B&H Publishing Group, which she was a publisher for many years. Mm-hmm. One of our big areas is looking at books in general for LifeWay stores. So
right.
LifeWay.com, LifeWay, the physical stores, 172?
172 stores. We are the third largest bookstore chain in North America.
And there's an important thing that you just said there. You just said bookstore chain, not
yes.
Christian bookstore
chain.
Yes. Mm.
So
I mean, we are a Christian bookstore chain, obviously, yeah. But we are the largest Christian bookstore chain, but also the third largest bookstore chain.
Yeah.
And I do think that sounds like a more impressive statistic.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's the one
absolutely.
I like to roll.
No, I like it.
So
I like it.
Roll
yeah.
with it. I'm like
no,
that.
No, I'm saying that that's a really positive
yeah, it
thing.
It totally works.
Like,
I'll update our marketing copies.
Yeah.
I've actually tried to find the statistics to determine whether we're the third largest in the world.
Mm.
My hypothesis is if we're the third largest in North America, we probably are the third largest chain in the world because so few other countries and regions have a chain concept, right?
True.
But yeah. I actually can't find tangible data for that. So if anyone else can, though, they should let us know so that way I could say we're the third largest in the world.
Absolutely. To our millions of listeners out there.
That's right.
Please.
That's right.
We will send you a free copy of some book that we have on Overstock.
Shh, Jennifer.
wow.
All right, so to quote Ron Burgundy, Jennifer is kind of a big deal.
Yes.
People know
yes.
her, you know.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
There
that's
you
right.
go.
And
we
huge
are,
deal.
We are yes. honored to have
such
you
a big
on
deal.
Today.
Such
yes.
a big deal I had to invite myself onto this podcast with millions of listeners.
That is semi-accurate, folks. Semi. It's I don't know. All right, like I said, there's going to be weirdness and we're here it is, all right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No, it's good. We're teasing.
Aaron, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking about something really interesting. We're talking about this idea of books as your biography.
Yes. So this started as when Jennifer moved into her new office, some things started going up in our wall.
Yeah.
Book covers.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone would walk in there and say, what in the world, Jennifer? Like, these are like some random books.
Okay.
There's probably about 15. She'll go through
yes.
these. But she started to share what that was, and I'm not going to steal it, but I think it's fascinating, and that's where this idea came up. So, Jennifer, I want you to tell about, the story of what that meant to you. So,
yeah.
Go ahead, Jennifer. I want to hear it.
Yeah, so I had the idea. I was trying to figure out, I've been with LifeWay for 10 years, and this is my, I believe, 11th office. So
that's a really fun inside.
Really
well, not really an inside joke of LifeWay. That's just the reality.
Yeah.
I'm moving my office today, actually, as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So when you move, you have to come up with, okay, what do I want this environment to be? And I wanted a new space. We're in a new building. And I started thinking about what's important to me and what would really reflect me. And I realized that books is my work. But books are really so much more than my work. The reason that it makes sense for me to have the job that I have is because I genuinely love books, because I've loved books my whole life. A lot of things in my life have changed from start until now, but books have from the time I learned to read whenever I was four until now, books have always been a constant. And so I had this idea of really just surrounding myself with reminders of the books that have most impacted me. I didn't include any books I've worked on professionally because I didn't want people getting into, you know, who I chose and who I didn't mm-hmm. choose. But really the ones that are about me as a person and how books have connected to me, and landed on this 15. You're right. You guessed the right number. I didn't even know the number. So that
oh,
was
really? Oh,
good
funny.
Job.
Yeah, 15. Yeah. There you go.
That was very Rain Man of you.
Oh, well, yeah, thank you. Well, I mean, all it did is just made me think of the same thing. I'm like, oh, gosh, if I could really do that. I mean, it's hard. It's mm-hmm. hard to do, but mm-hmm. Especially when you're Aaron reading 150 books a year or whatever he does.
It's 130, Dave. I'm not a machine.
Nerd. So one other thing, a previous boss of mine shall not be named.
John Emery.
Sorry.
Actually, John is not a lesser boss.
John would always make fun of me.
His former boss, my current boss?
Yeah, that's right. No, John is awesome.
John is awesome.
John is.
No, but he would make fun of me for rejecting people of trying to hire because I just said, yeah, they're not a book lover. You know, yeah. I said, they're just not love books. I'm like, yeah, but you have to love books doing what we do. Like, you're not going to make it. You're just not going to enjoy it. So. That's always Jennifer. You and I always connected for this really simple reason. We love books, regardless of what position we've been in. We love books,
and we love really different books.
Yes,
you know, I told Dave I've been listening to the podcast, and one observation I have is you guys are very much guys.
Oh, okay.
And that's good because you know you are.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to me because I think I have things in common with both of you and different mm-hmm. things in common with each of you, which mm-hmm. is interesting. Aaron and I kind of have some theological nerdy similarities, and Dave and I have some like random fact, love of knowledge, highbrow content kind of similarities.
That's generous. You basically implied that I have no theological chops. Okay.
You are not a theological nerd, though, Dave.
Thank you.
Despite the fact you've been reading devotional doctrines, you are not. Yeah.
But you know.
See what you just brought
up. Oh, well done. Thank you. His reading was good, wasn't it?
It was good. But I noticed that you guys, many of the books that you guys have talked about are not the books. None of those are on my walls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you've talked about any book. Mention any book that is a book that is on my wall.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to me as I thought, how much of that is because I have had not the most typical life. And so some of it is probably tied to difference in backgrounds, and the three of us have really different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. But I also wonder how much of it is, you know, gender. I am by no means a girly girl, but gender gives us a different lens on life. It gives us different preferences. A lot of times it puts us in different circles of hearing about different books. And so it's been interesting to hear the books that have influenced you all and then contrast that with the books that have influenced me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I think background is important. I think also, yes, gender is one thing. Mm-hmm. And I know that specifically, and Aaron and I have talked about this, like, you know, we're very influenced by also what we want our kids to read or and what they're introducing to us. You know, if they bring up a book, I'm like, okay, daughters of ours especially, you know, okay, I read The Giver, thanks to Mary Wiley and my kids because we're reading Lois Lowry. So, great.
Excellent choice.
I don't think I would have just found that.
Right.
So, there you go. But I want to get into your list.
Yes.
I want to hear
it. Yes. So how do you want me to do this? You just want me to list off the 15 books? That's kind of random.
I want you to walk through the journey of kind of, even if there's a way you can chronologically kind of identify when you read them.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to ask you to go deep into what's going on in life at that point, but you can just kind of share at a basic level. Things weren't good at that time, and this is how this book helped me. Yeah.
So the funny thing, the list has the range from, you know, secular books to Christian books to classics, fiction, nonfiction, devotional. But whenever I look at it chronologically, the very first book, the book that's on the wall that I read when I was the youngest, is probably the least appropriate for a child to read. So that maybe tells you a little bit about the context, and that is Heaven by V.C. Andrews. Now, if you are unfamiliar with V.C. Andrews, you may hear the title Heaven and think, oh, this is a Christian book. No. I'm sure someone has a website or lots of websites about V.C. Andrews where they can tell you and, you know, categorize her writing into a genre. I would categorize it totally from a reader lay consumer perspective as being dark, gothic serials, essentially. And she's most well known for her book Flowers in the Attic, which is dark and twisted. I read that as well. I discovered these books when I was four. My grandfather taught me to read, sat me down at the kitchen table and said, Jenny, no one calls me Jenny, incidentally, but Jenny, Jenny, you talk a lot and we want you to be quiet. So you're going to learn how to read, and then you'll read books. This is true. You need to know, listeners need to know that the guys are losing it in the studio right now because it is true. I talk a lot. So
I just think it's hilarious that your grandfather
said that. He also had the approach of throwing me over the side of the John boat into the Ohio River to teach me how to swim. So it was good. He taught me skills. So
somebody
somehow,
buy up the rights to her story for a movie.
This is going to be amazing.
Crazy.
Yeah,
it would be crazy.
So, but I learned to read in that time frame. I don't really remember how, but I could read, and there were adult novels. I mean, not adult in the sense of, you know, inappropriate, seriously inappropriate, but they, 400-page V.C. Andrews. I don't know, someone in the family must have loved V.C. Andrews, and they were stories, and I got caught up in the idea of a story. I didn't really imagine as a child. I wasn't around other children. I was an only child until I was 10 in the home. And so I played a lot outside, but my world was limited to what I could see. And it was through reading to myself, really silently, that I began to understand that there were people other than me, and there were experiences other than me, and there were places other than mine. I lived in a very small town of 3,000 people. We didn't even have stoplights. At this point, I hadn't been to school yet. So my world was very, very small. It was the size of my grandparents' backyard, basically. And all of a sudden, there were other places I could imagine. And I loved that. I could escape for hours. And it worked. My grandfather was right. I'd be quiet for hours. So they just kept, like, feeding me books. Yeah. But V.C. Andrews was really the first author that I fell in love with. And I had no concept. And I'm sure that at 4 and 5, I wasn't fully grasping them. By the time I was in, I read her books all through elementary school. And so by the time I was in first grade, I was really hooked on the series. And Heaven, the one that's on my wall, is my favorite of hers because it's about a little girl, essentially, who's in a small Appalachian mining town and in a very broken family and her hopes and her dreams and then what happens to her. And I could really relate to that as a child. So.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's fascinating the fact that you could read so early. You could read very mature content. How did you absorb it? Like, when you're, like, reading a story that, you know, not graphic in the sense of what you referred to earlier, just the sake of, like, just mature themes. Like, how did you process as a kid?
Well, I think that honestly, there was a lot of grace and providence in what I found because I was living in the midst of many of those same mature themes. So that didn't seem, that was actually the relatable part to me.
Yeah.
I remember, for instance, in the book Heaven, she ends up discovering a portion of her family where someone who cares for her and they have a doll factory. And the idea that dolls came from factories and there was a place where people made special dolls, like, that was the hard thing for me to grasp. The fact that there was brokenness and abandonment and drugs and, you know, sexual immorality, that was not a challenge for me. So the mature themes were actually, in a lot of ways, the gateway. Mm-hmm. Just because of the distinction of my experience. And so it's really weird because if you look at the wall, it goes from everything from Heaven to, you know, The Pleasures of God by John Piper or The Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer or Humility by Andrew Murray, which certainly if I had children today, I would much rather that, you know, my 4 and 5-year-old be exposed to The Pursuit of God than to V.C. Andrews. I've never, in all of the mentoring and work I've done with younger women, I've never, you know, suggested someone read V.C. Andrews. So, you know, clearly I'm not suggesting that. But for me, it was a way that helped me to connect to a world that was bigger than mine. And that was really important. And then really from there, the others that are on the list that have pursued, there's really only one other one from my childhood, mostly because I read the same books over and over as a child. Mm-hmm. I read many of the same books. But whenever I was in fourth grade, my fourth grade teacher, who was a great, great teacher, her name was Mrs. Gregory. She later married our elementary school principal and became Mrs. Duncan, which was a big deal to my little fifth grade mind. But mm-hmm. Mrs. Gregory would read to us after recess every afternoon. And I'm confident that someone read to me earlier, but I don't remember people reading to me. I remember Mrs. Gregory reading to me, and she would read to the class a book, a chapter book, and read a chapter a day. And she read Where the Red Fern Grows, and that was the first book she read. And so I had never heard of that book. I had always, by this point in school, I'd been exposed to children's books, and you know, I would go to the library, and the librarian would try to get me to go to the children's section, and I would have a lot of pride and arrogance about those books were not for me. I read E.C. Andrews. But it was a children's book that had grit and depth and hurt and love and hope and themes that all of a sudden I saw. But it was far more redemptive and not as broken as the things that I was reading. So that was the first story that I ever related to and connected with that was hopeful and had a sense of encouragement and love and support that felt accessible to me. So
I love that.
I love that book. It's a good book.
Mm-hmm. Has it shaped the way, because you teach preschool?
I do.
And how you read to them? I know it's younger.
Like it is. I teach little bitty kids. The way I engage the kids, I mean, mine are all pre-readers, but is very much, I think, with story and the importance of story and also of connecting to where they are. So a common thing I'll do, for instance, is I was teaching recently about the Israelites wandering in the desert and God providing manna for them when they did not have food. And the way that I started out talking about that to the kids was to explain that there wasn't a Chick-fil-A. Well, if you tell a group of three-year-olds that there's no Chick-fil-A, there's no peanut butter and jelly, all of a sudden the concept of famine becomes a lot more real to them, right? So it's, again, teaching through story, but you have to, something has to connect. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's some similarities there for sure.
Nice. You usually would like give them that snack like at the end or something like that. And like, sorry, kids, we're doing this raw right now. All right. This is the way Daniel Day-Lewis would do it. We're going to do it. Okay. All right.
Exactly.
Everyone be quiet. All right.
Just go with it. And so, yeah, no, they were all actually really cute and using their goldfish and talking about how if you were in a famine, you wouldn't have goldfish. They thought they were really clever to be able to apply that knowledge.
Nice.
So anyway. Okay. Should I keep going through the list?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
I'm not going to, there's so many and I don't want to.
Awesome.
I will say, I'll just hit some other key ones. Harry Potter. So again, with my love for story, I think that probably people who know me think that I'm a big nonfiction reader. And I do, there's a lot of nonfiction on here, but I love stories. I love stories well told. And Harry Potter came out, I was already an adult. I think I was in college. And I never read it. And as just transparently, as a new Christian, I became a Christian whenever I was 21. And I was one of those who, the minute after I became a Christian, I threw out all of my secular music and kind of went hardcore. I even started wearing all skirts for a while.
Did you rebuy all that music later?
I did.
Okay,
I did.
Good. So we had similar experiences.
It was sad because it's hard to find some of those Aerosmith CDs. You know, now it's challenging. So
dude,
I
looks like a lady. Sorry. I was humming it.
You didn't say it in the right.
I did.
You didn't like sing it.
No,
no one can sing it that same way. All right, let's just be real. All right,
my voice, my throat's still too raw from the last conference I was at. So
go on.
So I had not read the Harry Potter series because I first I was too old, and then I was kind of poo pooing it because surely that's going to make a whole generation of young children be witches. it turns
we're,
out.
We're all nodding.
Spoiler, it didn't.
Not yet, thinks one listener.
Yes. But then what was funny was I finished my Master of Divinity degree in seminary, and my brain was pretty fried. And I was about to start the PhD program in seminary, and I had about a month in between, and I thought, I just need to read something different. So I binge read the first six Harry Potter books were out then. So I read the first six in 4 days.
Okay.
In 4 days.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I was dreaming it. I was the whole thing. And then
reasonable.
I had
the best.
It was
that
amazing.
Is the best.
Yeah. I hadn't ever watched any of the movies. So I went completely in, totally not knowing really anything.
Nice.
And it was fantastic. I wish I could redo that all over again. And then I had to wait about 5 months for the seventh book. And I was like, how did people do this for like 10 years? That was, I did this right.
Yeah.
Come on, people.
That's right.
So I love that story. I love, even just as someone who loves books, you've got to respect what she did, mm-hmm. what J.K. Rowling did with those books. So
absolutely.
Harry Potter is on the list. And then really, I'd say everything else is nonfiction, so I'll just kind of run through several and make some notes. So Message and Mission by Eugene Nida, which I would be shocked if anyone listening knows that book. Aaron, did you know that book?
I did not know that.
I read it last week.
Yeah, right.
Twice.
Does anyone, do either of you know what this book is about?
I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
I'm going to just be
missioning.
Honest.
Yeah.
So Eugene Nida was a missiologist in the 70s and really an influential missiologist. My Master of Divinity degree is in missiology, which is essentially the study of how culture impacts Christianity and the gospel and the spread and the practice of Christianity. And the book Message and Mission is really foundational for understanding how truth applies across different culture in a way that is faithful to the truth and yet accessible to the people. And really basic, that's the study of hermeneutics today that you'll often hear about in Christian circles. It's essentially a hermeneutics book, but it's through a missiological lens and just is brilliantly done and really impacted me as a Christian. When People Are Big and God Is Small by Edward Welch, which is
looking at that one.
Excellent book.
Okay.
Fantastic book. It is. I have a tendency to, I'm a very type A, and those are sarcastic mutterings that you're hearing from Dave.
That's right, my inner review.
I am very much a perfectionist, and I, like many perfectionists, struggle then with needing to please everyone and wanting to be a perfectionist really so everyone knows I'm a perfectionist. And this is a book that really helps you to order rightly your view of God and your view of man. Mm-hmm. And that is a struggle for me. So that was really helpful for me, especially early when I was a Christian. Les Mis, which is, I have actually 24601, which if you know the story is Jean Valjean's prisoner number is tattooed on my wrist. So I am a very committed Les Mis fan. That story, both before I was a Christian and then after I was a Christian, has just consistently compels me and moves me. And so it would not be.
What was your favorite movie?
Oh, there's, I would say Liam Neeson is the one.
I have a man crush on him. That was Aaron. That wasn't Dave.
But,
sorry.
No, not at all.
But here's the thing.
Not at all.
Actually, so Les Mis, you've got the book, you've got the theater production, and then you've got the movies.
Yeah.
I listened to y'all's podcast on the books that have been made into movies and what's been done well.
And we didn't touch Les Mis.
I don't think we did.
You didn't.
No.
You didn't.
For we've missed a few. So
there were a lot that we couldn't get to.
Yeah, but it's okay because here's the thing. To me, Les Mis, if I were ranking the impact, and obviously this is just from my perspective, but if I were ranking book, theater, and movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would put theater first, book second, and movie third, consistently, even the best of the movies.
Yeah.
The theater production of Les Mis, because of what the music, the actual orchestration does, what it adds to it.
Yeah.
It to me moves the story more than the words on the page in the book can.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, so
that's how a lot of most people seem to know it. I mean, I might ask people, have you read it? And it's no, but I've seen the musical or I've watched the movie. It's been one of those. And it's
hard to read because it's a translation. It's extraordinarily long.
Yeah.
Many people would say, if you read the book, the theater production emphasizes the faith journey far more than the book does.
Yeah.
The book gets into more of the political themes, and I'm not like super passionate about, you know,
it's
French,
a fascinating backdrop, no doubt.
It's
not the center point. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I love Les Mis. If you're ever in London and you can see Les Mis on the West End, you will not regret it.
I bet.
Yeah.
Where were you in life at that time when you first read it?
The first time I read Les Mis, I think, was probably via Cliff Notes in Mrs. Key's eighth grade English class, and I'm sure I skimmed it and maybe even cheated on part of it.
Gotcha.
That was not my highest level of appreciation for great literature.
Yeah.
Then I read it in college, and I really loved it. But I didn't, just where I was in that season, I didn't totally understand the grandeur in the same way.
Sure.
It was through the theater production in London. I saw it in London. The music really, it just did something different. So then I went back and reread the book. And then it was a whole different experience.
Right.
So.
Well, but go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, I wonder if that's a similar experience that people have with, say, The Phantom of the Opera, for example. Like, so I haven't read the book that started it all, but I have done both the theatrical production and multiple versions of the story, including a pretty in film, including a pretty terrible one from the 1980s that had a lot of synthesizers.
Synthesizers.
The 80s were a bad year.
Depending on what you're talking about. But not media.
Soundtrack.
Soundtracks
suffered
bad.
During that era.
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
And neon lights.
But I mean, like to your point of there's this emotive element that just gets lost in translation, even with a terrific score that's being faithfully recorded. Yeah, there's that in-person contact that is
just
missing.
Different.
Yeah.
For the listener who would know, this is probably the most referenced book that you would that you would bring out, I would say, that I hear as someone working here.
Oh,
with
you mean
you.
I talk about Les Mis
talk
a lot?
About,
yeah,
I mean,
Les Mis
certainly we
huge.
Talk about Harry Potter with stuff like that, but I feel like Les Mis, I could always tell, like, wow, that has had a spiritual, emotional impact, all of the above on you. So I was curious when it really started hitting
home. Yeah, I would say it was really London, but it has consistently been over the course of the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It has kept coming back up in my life. And it's one of those stories that there's many different entry points and it can impact you in new ways over and over again.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is the hallmark yeah. of an incredible book.
Yeah. Yeah. Reading it again and again.
Right.
Absolutely. I think that says it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Keep going.
Okay. Hillbilly Elegy. This is the newest read that I have on my wall. It is, I think, it's my favorite book I've read in about the past 5 years. You guys, if you haven't read Hillbilly Elegy, you should. It is provocative from a sociological standpoint. It's engaging from a story standpoint, and the town that it is that J.D. Vance, the author, is from, that is the backdrop for much of the story, is really similar to where I grew up. And so I related to a lot of the story that way. You can see my wall is really incredibly self-centered, but because it's all the stuff. But that's also what makes it the biography,
exactly.
right?
But
that's and
that's
the,
whole,
that's
like
the
that.
Distinction.
Yeah, exactly.
Is
I've seen
it's,
that before.
Yeah.
There's
right.
something about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I loved Hillbilly Elegy. We wish to inform you that tomorrow we will be killed with our families. That is actually the title
Kids?
Of the book. Yeah, I read happy books. We wish to inform you that tomorrow we will be killed with our families by Philip, I believe it's Gourevitch. He was a reporter, I want to say, for The New Yorker. I haven't looked at the bio in a long time. He was in Rwanda. doing reporting on tribal conflict when the Rwandan genocide broke out. And this book is a chronicling of the days of the genocide told through the lens of people who lost family members.
Yeah.
I was reading this book when I was living in my car, homeless, depressed, despondent, pagan, angry girl, and very much lamenting about my own life and stuck in kind of a drain of self-pity, and had begun reading this book the week that God saved me. And it happened in Providence that the next chapter that I read, the story was told, again, told from the week of the roughly 100 days of the Rwandan genocide. But the day that the event in the story happened to have been a day that was really significant in my own life. But this story put the suffering, which I had gone through, I'd had some difficult things happen to me, but certainly when you put it in the context of a genocide,
perspective,
all of a sudden it brings a perspective. And so really I'd say that's a common theme of all of these, is the perspective to understand our own lives and to understand life around us. And so that book is a great reminder to me to think beyond myself, even if I'm getting there through the lens of how it impacted me. Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer. Mm-hmm. I think Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer and Humility by Andrew Murray, which is also on my list, are arguably, big statement to make, the two best, most lasting Christian books that every Christian should read that have ever been published.
And people, if you haven't read them, they're short.
They're short.
And just like to the point, and it sticks with you. So yeah.
I think they apply consistently and provocatively, regardless of the context, and that's...
I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, we're in publishing, and we see a lot of different books published on similar topics.
Right.
But for some reason, some of those last, some don't.
Right.
These are the ones that last.
Yeah, they've lasted generations, and there's a reason for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, fun book.
Okay. Yeah.
This is the happy book, the one book on my wall that makes you laugh. Are you ready?
Everyone's so excited about
Bossy
this one.
Bossy Pants by Tina freaking Fey. So.
I think that's actually on her business cards now. Is,
freaking me. Yeah,
that's right.
You can read into that one however you like.
Yeah, that's right.
Man, I loved this book. If you have not read this book, I mean, it's you know, got language and it's got things, but the audiobook in particular is amazing. I actually read the book and then I listened to the audiobook as well.
Yep.
I laughed out loud reading this book. I think more than any book that I have ever read before. And it paints a picture of a person who is real and flawed, but has a really distinct lens on how she experiences life that makes you want to shape how you experience life, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to be that Tina Fey, but I want to see life as colorfully is Tina Fey sees life.
Yeah.
You know,
because
the mundane.
Yeah, she goes through things. I mean, she goes through things that all of us go through.
Right.
You know, and so, and
she's
that
blessed.
I've only listened to the audiobook, and I drove the family crazy because I was listening to it with earbuds.
Yeah,
because
you
car,
can't listen to that with the kids.
And she was
no.
Why are you laughing so much? I'm like, this is the funniest book ever. I can't describe.
It's like, we'll get the children taken away.
Now, if you've ever seen, though, this book cover, you'll know it is the creepiest book cover.
It's amazing, though.
It is like, her face and like man arms. I think it's in my head, it's Alec Baldwin. I imagine it as being Alec Baldwin's man arms. I don't know that it is, but in my head, that's how I kind of make it make sense. But
maybe it's those hands that Tom Cruise wore in
Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Yes, copious amounts of armor.
I really wasn't.
Not that you've ever seen that, Dave.
That's so gross. Sorry. I wasn't sure if I could put it on the wall for my own creep factor because the cover bothers me, creeps me out.
So listener, when you walk in, that is the first cover
you
actually see, and you're like, whoa, okay, if you don't know any of it, you're really confused, but to me it makes me laugh every
and time. I arranged these in a very on the wall, they're arranged in a really chaotic manner, and that was
not
intentional.
In the biography and how I was thinking.
I did it in a way that kind of amuses me. So, for instance, Tina Fey is in between The Pleasures of God by John Piper and The Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer, because I just liked knowing that nowhere else in the world is Bossy Pants by Tina Fey in between those two books.
And so you know what makes me happy seeing that is I can imagine the Piper gif that's appropriate for it.
Yeah. Oh, completely. Yes. So, like Tina Fey spreading a passion for like the humor gifts of the world. I don't know, but
yep.
She's spreading a passion for something.
Yep. So listeners, we'll put that gif in the show notes.
Yeah.
And it will be glorious.
So, and then I think two more, The Ragamuffin Gospel by Brennan Manning, which,
absolutely.
Again, I love things that reflect someone's experience having a relationship with God through kind of the grit and the reality of life. And certainly Brennan Manning reflected that. The Ragamuffin Gospel is core book for many kind of the Gen X generation in particular in Christianity that reflected that we don't have to be perfect. And in fact, we're never going to be perfect and we shouldn't try to be. So, and then The Christian Secret to the Happy Life by Hannah Whitall Smith. Have you read this book, Aaron?
I have not.
Have you read it, Dave?
I should.
We've published this book. So,
I'm aware.
We put it in the classics team.
It's in our Read and Reflects with the Classics. So this book was somewhat controversial for us to include it because Hannah Whitall Smith eventually walked away from the faith prior to her death. But the book itself, I think it's a really airy, light reflection on the joy that we should have despite trials, despite circumstances, whenever we are trusting in a good God. And it's, again, a short book. It's interesting. When I read nonfiction, I prefer short, really direct nonfiction, not wasting sentences. And I'm a lot more patient with a novel and with a story. Mm-hmm. I don't like short novels.
Yes.
Once I get into a story, I really want something that's 400 pages or more.
Yeah.
But the nonfiction that's on here is all a lot shorter.
Yeah.
So that's my list.
Absolutely.
That's a classic list.
That is fascinating, Jennifer. Again, like I think, you know, challenge our listeners is to think of your own story, you know, through the books that you've read, like, you know, from when you were a child to how that formed who you are to now. I also love, I didn't get a follow-up with this in Harry Potter, is that we've gone back to read a lot of children's books.
Yeah.
And I think, because of the story element.
Right.
You know, you don't want to lose that at all. And that is like a theme. I keep hearing, like, okay, why are you going back to that? I mean, whether you have kids or not, like, I just see people doing that. And because they're yearning for a good story. And children's stories can be fantastic and deep.
And I mean, the thing that certainly the thing I like about them is the fact that they are, they tend to avoid the deconstructionist approach that so many adult-oriented authors are still moving toward. Mm-hmm. People want happy endings. They want a satisfying conclusion to their story, as opposed to, and everyone was sad and evil and, you know, Gone Girl.
Right.
Which is like, no, I don't want to read that.
I loved it.
I'm sorry. Gone Girl's such a Dave book.
Oh, no, no. There's nothing, like, I mean, if that's...
But I get it.
I mean, I read Neil Gaiman. His stuff is not happy and cheery.
Right.
Even his kids' books are twisted.
Yeah.
But,
absolutely.
So there's a place for that. It's just not for my whole diet, at least.
Absolutely.
There's a balance of it. I really enjoy series, a well-done series that hasn't, you know, jumped the shark. But being able to, you know, grow with characters and to be able to see them develop and to have multiple arcs going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think one thing I hope, you know, listening to this conversation for all of you who are tuning in, that you'll take away from this is that when you're thinking about the books that have shaped you, certainly my tendency is to get a little bit pretentious with it in terms of, you know, I want to present something, I want to present a view of myself with what I'm reading all the time. And I mean, I love the fact that the way that you've presented this on your wall, and I hope this doesn't sound incorrect, that it's just, there's this authenticity to it. It's like, and as you've been explaining each of these, that it's like there's reasons for each one of these books. You know, I mean, I think the first stuff I read was what was the first thing I read? It was like one of the first adult books that I read, or adult in quotation marks books, was a Star Trek The Next Generation tie-in book, right? So, but it's like...
It's something you're interested in.
Yeah, exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely.
Like, if media tie-ins are your jam, then go for it.
Exactly. I read what was on a shelf.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there's that aspect. I also read a lot as a child. I read the Reader's Digest.
The short stories,
drama in real life, like condensed versions. I read a lot of those. Like, I think my grandmother subscribed to those. So a lot of flesh-eating kind of diseases, getting cured, that kind of stuff. So
every day,
yeah,
it's all right. It's my jam, man.
There you go.
Fantastic.
Nice.
I think for parents, though, just to be reminded that you really have an opportunity to shape a lot of where the starting point is for your children, and even in my grandparents, my grandfather shaped that very much just by kind of accidentally. By what was around, but introducing the concept of reading, introducing that as a value, stewarding it, and then fueling it through the resources that you provide for your kids, the books that you make available to them. And I would encourage you to not make available to them any V.C. Andrews. Probably no, we wish to inform you that tomorrow we will be killed with our families.
Mm-hmm.
But as your children, get into high school and they get older, some of those things, helping them to understand, you want to protect your children, but at the same time, books can be a really helpful way to introduce them to things that are outside of that net of protection.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that they're able to develop an understanding and perspective and empathy for those who are going through it.
Yeah,
absolutely. I've noticed this theme, and I remember it was started to happen when we grew up, was we were introduced as middle readers to a lot of books about Holocaust survivors.
Yeah.
And for a kid, they're like, what? They can't comprehend, 20 million people being killed. They don't.
Right.
But when it's the lens of an Anne Frank or in Number of the Stars, you're like, okay, that girl's my age. Okay, now it's so relatable. And that's a starting point. And there's so many more themes you can explore. But I do appreciate that. What are you reading, Aaron?
Oh, man, what am I reading?
You got to think about this.
What
Jennifer?
Am I reading right now? That is
am
a good
I
question.
Reading?
I am just finishing up. The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath.
Yeah.
And so the whole idea behind the book is, how do you flip the script and and create this defining experience for people, whether that's if you're thinking about it from the perspective of your customers, how do you do that? Mm-hmm. If it's from your direct reports in a leadership perspective, that space, even your family, your church, however, whatever that looks like, whatever that space is, that's it. It is a great TED Talk. It is a really great TED Talk. Like so many books like this. It's entertaining the whole way through.
Yeah.
But
that's great.
But you kind of get the big idea early on, and they spend the rest of the book just kind of unpacking it. It's great.
I've got my candy, John Grisham, Camino Island, his latest, which is fun.
Nice.
Have you read it?
I have not.
No, but it's all publishing. It's the Stolen F. Scott Fitzgerald novels. So it's fun.
I haven't read any Grisham in a long time. It's really interesting. I read a lot all of his early stuff, and then somewhere along the way, I got off of it.
Yeah.
I've been sick, so I haven't read in the past week since I finished a book. But I just read Even in Our Darkness by Jack Deer, which is a memoir. Jack Deere was the head of the Vineyard Charismatic Church movement in the 80s.
Okay.
And I wasn't a Christian then and wasn't in Christianity, so I'd never heard of him until a friend recommended this book. And it's his memoir of his life, which has been really amazing and challenging, and the book opens with his son's suicide. I read a lot of happy stuff, people. I'm realizing as I'm talking about this, but it's redemptive. And anyway, really provocative book. I actually listened to the audiobook of this, and he's got a really gravelly voice that sounds like he's been smoking rocks for about 30 years, and it went perfectly with the story. And I thought if this would have been a smooth reader, it wouldn't have worked, but it totally enhanced it.
Yeah.
So it was great.
No, I love that.
It was
I love that.
Book.
Nice. I got one more.
Oh, you do?
I do. Right. I do. It's one that I'm going to start reading as soon as I get home. It's Action Comics, 80 Years of Superman.
That's what I saw you posted. Okay.
That's right. So, well, that was Action Comics number 1,000 that you saw me post on Instagram.
That's different.
So, this is my nerd. This is my nerd.
Yeah, this is
space.
A boy. This is a boy thing.
Well, I know.
Thing.
But we have challenged each other, and we do need to do this. We're going to do a podcast now where we're going to kind of review each other's book recommendation that there's no way we would read it otherwise.
Yeah, right.
So,
that's
so,
a good idea.
So, Dave is going to read Dave's going to read a comic book.
I haven't read a comic book
never
either.
Have. Mm-hmm. I have nothing against them. I just never
So, since you tend to go toward. More darker literature.
Yes, I do.
I've got a few
yes.
I can send your way.
So. Okay, yes, I do. I goth wasn't a thing whenever I was in high school. I was pre-goth, but if it had been a thing, I would have so been seriously goth.
Yeah. It's an interesting one to end
Jesus
on.
Has right come here. And brought the light.
Thank
so there you,
you
go.
Jennifer ended up better.
There we go. All right. Guys,
thanks, Jennifer, for being on the show with us.
This is great.
You know, thanks for thinking all on your own of inviting me and just deciding that would be really good to have, you know, the vice president of books who's right down the hall and you might work for come talk about books.
It's been our pleasure.
But, it's
been our pleasure.
Yeah, all in good phone.
That's right.
She'll get the last word. Go.
Yeah. No, it's good. Okay. Read books. Buy books.
Nice. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a rating and review on iTunes. Your feedback helps more people find the show. You can find me on Twitter at Aaron Strongarm. And for more content, including reading recommendations, please visit bloggingtheologically.com.